You're listening to a Crossroads original podcast.
Hey, everybody. Joe Amaral back with you today on the official 100 Huntley Street podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I'm going to be talking about an issue, unfortunately, that we all experience. And you can't give a lot of guarantees in life, but this is one of the guarantees that we can give, is that at some point in our journey in this life, we are going to experience grief. And I don't know where you're listening to this. Maybe you got your headphones on and you're, you know, on the subway going to work, or maybe you're in the car and you're driving to work and you're listening to this. I know that for some of us, it can be a difficult topic because maybe you're in the midst of grief right now. Maybe you went through it a few years ago, and this could be a little triggering for some people to kind of relive, you know, talking about grief. And if you haven't gone through grief, thank God. But unfortunately, at some point, like I said, we're all going to have to deal with grief. And so later in the program, we're going to be talking with Dr. Bill Webster, and it's going to be an awesome conversation. And as I was preparing to have the talk with him, I remember thinking, this is like a free counseling session for me. Yeah, everybody else gets to listen in, and everybody else gets to benefit from the interview, but really this is for me because, you know, I lost my dad back in 2008 and I had a lot of issues with the grieving process, and I'm going to be able to talk to him about that. And I know that it's going to help many of you. He is a professional. He has experienced grief himself, and he's so good at what he does. And I know that he's going to offer some guidance and help that's going to it's just going to be of benefit to you as you're on this journey. And so before we get into that conversation, I thought it would be good to start with, you know, a definition of what grief is. And this is by the American Psychological Association. And it's really straightforward. It says, grief is the anguish experienced after significant loss, usually the death of a beloved person. And it's very simple on paper, but boy, is that hard to live through sometimes, isn't it? Yeah, it's anguish experienced after a significant loss. But when it's someone that you love, someone that you were close to, someone that you relied on, and now they're gone, you're left dealing with their death. You're left dealing with the loss and the vacancy, that space that's left in your life. You know, and grief often includes sometimes a psychological distress. Some people suffer with separation anxiety. There's confusion. A lot of us have this obsessive dwelling on the past, right? Like, what could I have done differently? And a lot of people have apprehension about the future. How am I going to go on? What's my life going to look like without them in it? And how am I going to be okay? And in some cases, immense grief can become even life-threatening because it disrupts our immune system. Some people fall into self-neglect because they get into such this deep, dark despair. And some people, it even goes to suicidal thoughts. So grief is a real thing that a lot of us are dealing with or are going to deal with in our life. And we've heard about the five stages, you know, of grief and what they are. And it's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And maybe you're on a journey of grief right now, and I don't know where you are in this process. And one thing that was kind of interesting learning as I was preparing to talk about this issue today is that, you know, we think it's an order, you know, first denial, like, no, they're not gone, you know, I'm going to see them again tomorrow, or, you know, it was just a bad dream, or whatever it is. And we kind of have this denial that we go through. And then we think automatically we go to the next phase of anger and then bargaining and depression and acceptance. But the truth is, and at least what the professionals are saying, is that there's no real order of how you process these emotions and how you process these feelings. Everybody goes through it in whatever way they need to. And this is one of the things that I'll be speaking with Dr. Bill Webster about is, you know, is there a wrong way to mourn? Is there a wrong way to grieve? You know, am I a bad person if I don't grieve in the right order, you know, and all this kind of stuff that we judge ourselves with. And I believe it's going to be a very freeing conversation for a lot of people. You know, and I was able to pull up and look up some stats, and, you know, these are U.S. numbers, and so the numbers might be higher, but if you look at the population, you'll begin to get a, you know, a reference point of this epidemic of grief. And we know that older adults experience grief at a higher rate than younger adults or children. You know, spousal loss is very common in older adults, as well as the death of friends and siblings and cousins. And so this is an American number, but I learned that about 2.5 million people die in the United States annually. And this was kind of staggering. It says that each death, so out of the 2.5 million, each leaves an average of 5 grieving people behind. I mean, do the numbers. That's a lot of people grieving at any one given time. So when you meet someone, you don't know where they are on their journey. Maybe they're grieving when you meet them, and maybe they said something that didn't sit right with you and you get upset with them. Hang on a second. Just take a beat. Take a moment and breathe, because you don't know what they're going through. And this last number was also really, really hard to fathom. And it says that 1.5 million children, that's 5% of children in the United States, have lost one parent or both by the time they reach the age 15. I mean, it's an unbelievable thing that so many people are dealing with on a regular basis. And that's why I'm so thankful that Dr. Webster is here to walk us through how to deal with grief in a healthy way. And just a couple of, you know, items here before we dive into the conversation of, you know, what causes grief. And of course, there's many more, but here are 5 major ones. And the first is, I think, the one that most of us can identify with, and that's the death of a loved one, right? Losing a person that you're close to, that's the most commonly recognized form of grief or cause of grief. Coping with the death of a loved one in the family is one of the most common human experiences. I mean, after my father passed away, you know, you start having conversations with people about, you know, people that they've lost in their lives. And you're like, oh my goodness, I thought I was the only one. And you're not. There's a lot of people dealing with grief. But another difficult form of grief is when a person loses someone to suicide. You know, grief can be more challenging and complicated in that process. Divorce. That's another form and cause of grief. You know, while divorce isn't, you know, the same as a person's death, it can still cause both parties to grieve, right? Because divorce represents a complex change that can impact many parts of your life, and it's grieving the loss of a relationship. For some people, it's the loss of a job, and for others, it's even something like the loss of a pet, someone who loved their pet like they, you know, loved a human child. And there's no judgment or anything like that. It's everybody grieves and everybody processes grief in different ways. So in a few moments, I'm going to be speaking with this grief specialist, Dr. Bill Webster, and he's going to give us practical guidance on how to deal with grief in the healthiest way possible. And I know that today, if you'll let it, you can be set free from your grief. Yeah, so Dr. Bill was a grief counselor for many years before he retired, and he's still a prolific author and well-known international speaker. And we're going to talk about his new book, Grief, The Unwelcome Journey. And he's pioneered a model of community grief support, which is currently being utilized in many communities across Canada and around the UK. And he brings a unique blend of personal experience and, you know, academic education and many years of practical application to his work. Bill, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, well, we're talking in the green room and I came across your lovely accent, and you're from the UK. Which part?
I was born and raised in Scotland.
Love it.
A little town called Arbroath.
I won't even try to pronounce it because you said it so well.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're with us today. And this is a really important topic. And sometimes we're afraid to talk about grief because I know for me, like I said earlier, I lost my dad and I was afraid to talk about him for a while because I missed him so much. And I was afraid of the feelings that would come up. And is there a wrong way to grieve? Is there such a thing?
Well, I think there is, and with great respect, I think you just described it.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, the fact that people don't talk about it and don't want to express the feelings is really part of the difficulty. I think, you know, any time we have a significant loss, we're going to grieve. Loss is defined as when you're deprived of something or someone
okay.
that you cared about and that was valuable to you. So someone, you lose someone by death, you lose someone to an illness, you lose a job. Any yeah. loss causes grief because grief is a reaction to any yes. significant loss. And one of the most important things I try to say to people is this, that grief is not a sign of weakness. Grief is a sign that we cared.
I need you to say that again, because that was really, really powerful.
Grief is not a sign of weakness. Grief is a sign that we cared. Have you noticed how often when someone gets emotional, oh, I'm emotional, I'm sorry. And where did we get the idea that we had to apologize for our emotions? Queen Elizabeth once famously said, grief is the price we pay for love. Ooh. So anytime people feel something, you know, I mean, there's different kinds of emotions.
Sure.
And I'm absolutely convinced that there's not really grief emotions and good emotions. There's positive emotions because the word emotion in French can mean to be excited. So you go to a soccer game,
right.
A football game, sorry, forgive me.
There you go.
You go to a football game
yeah.
and you see excited people.
Sure.
Nobody criticizes that.
True.
But when we go to a funeral, we say things like, well, now you got to be strong. You got to pull yourself together. You mustn't be emotional. Or the ultimate guilt trip. Your loved one wouldn't want you to cry.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to think after I'm gone, someone will care enough about me to shed a tear.
That's true.
And I think the most important thing we can do for grieving people is to validate the fact that grief isn't a sickness or a disease or a mental health disorder, as it's sometimes defined in our society. Grief is a normal reaction to what is always an unwelcome event.
An unwelcome event. I'm so glad you said what you did, because when my dad died, I even had to think about, you know, the date all the time. And I think I said this earlier, it was 2008, but I'm like, was it, was it not? It's like, I know I need to remember, but part of my brain doesn't want to remember because of the pain associated with that.
That's exactly right. These are known as avoidance behaviors.
That's a natural thing.
It's a natural thing.
Wow.
That's right. Because so often after a death, the things you'll hear people say is, I can't believe it. It just seems so unreal. Is this really happening? And that's our defense mechanism. Because often after a death, we don't feel emotional. I mean, how many times have you gone to a funeral and you see people, you're expecting it to be on the floor in grief, and actually they're doing quite well. Oh, you're doing so well. My, you're really strong. You're really handling it. It's not that they're strong. Of course they're strong. To stand on your two feet at a time like that, you're strong. It's the fact that we're numb. Mm-hmm. We're in shock.
Yeah.
And we just can't believe it because we don't want to believe it. And it takes our defense mechanism a long time for it to filter through to the place where we can say, yeah, this is real. And I have to confront how my life is different.
This is, I know people who are watching this are receiving something. I definitely am. And it's kind of taking me back. So I remember at the moment when my dad passed, there was a lot of emotion. There's a lot of, you know, weeping, and then it stopped. And then you kick into administrative mode. Okay, who are going to be the pallbearers? And what are we going to print the bulletins? And who's going to say the prayer? And you go into this mode. Is that healthy to kind of delay the grief until you can deal with it? Or is that just natural?
I really believe, Joe, that people need to do what they need to do.
Okay.
Because, yes, there's the initial shock, the impact of what has happened. But then, you know, the busyness and stuff. What surprises people is that sometimes it's a few months after the death or 6 months down the road. And all of a sudden, boom, the reality. And the difficulty is people who saw them at the time of the funeral, oh, you're doing well, you're strong, are now saying, well, gee, what's wrong with
you?
We thought you were doing so well. And then people have to pretend because they think, well, I'm not doing as well as I was expected. I'm not getting over it in 3 months and all this kind of thing. And that's where our support programs come in, to sort of validate and legitimize that this is a process. This is a journey that people are on. And when people ask me, how long does grief last? My answer is, it always takes longer than people who haven't been through it seem to think. And I think that's as good as you can go, because there's no one neat timeline for grief. Grief comes and goes. Comes at birthdays and Christmas and anniversaries.
Sure. And these the first, kinds of things. The first
right.
year, right?
All the firsts. That's exactly right.
My goodness, as you're talking, I'm going back, you know, it was almost 6 months to the day after my dad died that I had my first cry. And I was at a drive-through in Tim Hortons, and I don't know what happened. All of a sudden it hit me. It's like, he's gone. And then I didn't know how to process it because I'm like, why haven't I been crying for 6 months? What kind of a son doesn't cry for his father? And you kind of have this guilt. Mm-hmm. And then along the journey, sometimes people say things, and I think they're well-meaning.
Yeah.
You know, like my dad worked in a window factory, Bill, for 30 years, and somebody said to me, oh, you know, the Lord needed your dad. I said, what, to caulk windows? Like, just say sorry for your loss. Like, what do you do when people say that kind of stuff?
Well, I would think as a person who worked with windows, that would have been a real pain.
Oh.
But no, see, I think, look, I like to believe that people mean well.
Mm.
But the problem is they don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. And so they come up with cliches.
That's true.
Maybe it's a blessing in disguise, or maybe they're in a better place and stuff. Cliches are an attempt to bring meaning to a situation to the grieving person just doesn't make any sense. So it's a waste of time. And I think that people, again, people mean well. This is not an indictment on anybody.
Yes,
they mean well.
Yeah.
But sometimes they say things that just aren't helpful. And that then the grieving person closes up. And so I think we have to be, I like to tell my students, if you're talking more than the grieving person, you're not being as helpful as you think.
That's great.
You know, I think listening and being there for them and not having advice. Because advice applies. If I'm giving you advice, I'm telling you what's meaningful for me, not necessarily for you. I have to find out what's meaningful. And that's a much more effective way of dealing with grieving people.
Oh, this is so helpful. I know there's people watching this right now saying, oh, I wish I would have known this 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And I'm so glad you're sharing this. What about people who go through, almost like a survivor's guilt? You know, they play the what if game, or what if I had called them, or what if I had been driving, or what if I had done this? Like, people struggle with that guilt.
Sure.
How do you deal with that?
I think guilt is a topic all by itself. And I think guilt is actually one of the most useless and counterproductive emotions in the whole basket of emotions. Guilt says, I could have done something.
Right.
If only I'd done this. What if I'd done something different? What if I'd done more? But here's the problem. When you've done everything for someone you care about, you always wish you could have done more. So in many ways, guilt is a setup. People would rather feel guilty than feel helpless. Because after a death, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
But we don't like that. We like to be in control, and we like to feel that, hey, I could do something to change this. And it's ultimately when, you know, we come to the place where we realize there's nothing more that I can do. Well, maybe. As you know, I lost my son 5 years ago. And you lost your dad in 2008. And people would say, well, come on, Bill, 5 years.
Get
come
over
on,
it.
Come on, Joe.
Yeah.
That's right. You ought to be over it. But you don't get over it. You get through it.
Ooh.
But here's the point. I think it's very important to understand that people only want one thing. A grieving person only wants one thing. And this is the reason why they get angry with other people. This is why we have to tolerate angry responses. The one thing a grieving person wants, they want their loved one back.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that we can't do. But here's the point, I think. In a situation where there's nothing you can do, what can you do? I think you have to make a choice. Is my life going to go on? My son, his daughter was 4 years old when he died. She's now 9. And she's the light of my life. I'm going to do everything I can for her.
Yeah.
Because it's the right thing to do, because it's also what he would want me to do. Because that would be, he'd say, Dad, you know, make sure you look after her. And so I think we make a choice. Things happen in life that are tragic. Things happen in life that are not good. But we come to a place where we have to decide, you know, this may not be good, this will surprise you. Here, please hear me out.
Yeah.
God doesn't give anyone a good life.
Mm.
I believe with all my heart that God gives us a life. But sometimes tragedy comes along. We say, well, where's God in the midst of the tragedy?
Mm-hmm.
Bad things happen to good people.
Absolutely.
A good life is not defined by the life that's given to us. A good life is defined by what we do with the life we've been given.
Yeah.
So I lost my wife in 1983. I lost my son in 2018, and many other losses. We've all had losses.
Mm.
But it comes down to the question, what am I going to do about it? What am I going to decide to do now that this has happened?
Mm.
And that, I think, becomes the key.
You know, I feel blessed that I can have this, you know, conversation with you and, you know, ask questions that, you know, I need answered because I know it's reflective of other people who are watching. But you've been able to develop a course on grief to help people on the journey. Tell us a little bit about the course and how people can access it. I think it's important.
After my wife died, I went back to the University of Toronto and did my doctoral work, and I developed a model of community grief support. There's a lot of grief counselors out there now. There weren't any grief counselors even back in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
And grief counselors have a very important and valuable contribution to make. But it can be expensive, and a lot of people can't afford professional help. So we've developed a model of grief support that basically I've put my program into 12 30-minute videos.
Okay.
And I've found a sponsor in Arbor Memorial who are taking this right across the country and offering it to churches and to community groups and to anyone who can use it in the communities across the country. And it's offered at no cost.
Wow.
No cost. Because I really believe that the last thing people need after a significant loss is to have to put out money to get the help that they need. And I also believe that there's great power in people coming together, in friendship, certainly in understanding and in support and these kinds of things. But now, for goodness sake, don't tell my sponsors this. The real magic isn't in Bill Webster's videos.
Mm.
The real magic is in the fact that the videos create an atmosphere in which people can talk together.
Yes.
One on one. I mean, you and I have had a lovely conversation here,
mm-hmm.
and it's been helpful for both of us in our loss. Mr. Rogers once famously said, anything that is mentionable is manageable.
Mm.
I think that's a great principle. Anything that's mentionable is manageable, but we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
You see, we don't know what to say, we don't know what to do. The only mistake we can make is not talking about it, because that which cannot be put into words cannot be put to rest.
Oh, wow.
And so we really need to, that's a principle from critical incident stress debriefing.
Okay, well, first of all, we have to have you back because I feel like we just scratched the surface here. And if you can believe it, we're all out of time. But I'm so grateful for the insights that you've shared. And I want to encourage people out there to get a hold of that course. You know, talk about what you're going through. That's so important. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate
it. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Joe.
I know that for a lot of us, talking about our grief is difficult. And like I said in my conversation with Dr. Webster, I remember feeling ashamed because, you know, I didn't grieve for my dad right away. You know, what kind of son doesn't, you know, grieve the loss of his father? And I remember really beating myself up over that for a long, long time. And I was so thankful to have this conversation today, to learn about, you know, a healthy way to process that grief and to understand that everybody's journey is different and that it's okay to grieve on your own time. And I want to encourage you today, if you're dealing with grief and maybe you feel like, man, I am not handling this well, you know, maybe you're struggling with depression because of it, maybe you've put yourself into a negative space. Maybe you're lashing out at people because you're still dealing with the anger, right? Of how could they? How could they leave me? Don't they? Didn't they know how much I needed them? How could they? And we have all this mixed bag of emotions. And if you need somebody to pray with you today, I'm going to encourage you to call our prayer lines, 1-866-273-4444. And the prayer lines here at Crossroads are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you wake up from a nightmare, if you wake up from a bad dream, a feeling bad about the grief that you're going through, or you're feeling suicidal, or you're feeling angry, or whatever it is that's going on in your life, please, you're not alone. You're not alone. You're only alone if you choose to be. So please don't choose to be alone. Call today again, 1-866-273-4444. We want to pray with you. We want to be here for you. Well, I really hope that today's podcast has been an encouragement to you. And if you're on a journey of grief, that you picked up something today that's going to help you get through it, come through in a healthy way. And I'm looking forward to seeing you on the other side of your journey. My friends, God bless you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, this has been Joe Amaral, and we'll see you next time on the 100 Huntley Street podcast.
Thank you for your ongoing support of Crossroads, a supporter-funded nonprofit organization and member of the Canadian Centre of Christian Charities. Thanks to faithful people like you, we are able to continue producing 100 Huntley Street. You can write to Crossroads, P.O. Box 5100, Burlington, Ontario, L7R4M2, or visit crossroads.ca to learn more about our programs.